showing that we have been proceeding in a good faith effort, and we've laid out an implementation schedule. We're hoping that they concur with us.
Eric?
Yeah, if I could just add a brief couple of points of clarification. I think what is proposed would commit the port to moving ahead in 17 aggressively mm-hmm. with phase one infrastructure improvements that could well help the port achieve benchmark.
Mm-hmm.
But we won't know until the facility is constructed and we do the testing. I know that if we, were to obtain the green light from Ecology, we would move aggressively to seek grant funding to help us with that first phase.
And do you have an idea of where you'd go for that?
USDA and CURB, I think, would be the two first asks. And those are both the both grant programs that we have preliminarily identified are ones that are not on a they're open year round, mm-hmm. so we could move immediately once we receive the basically confirmation of our approach from Ecology.
So isn't CURB a loan instead of a grant?
Mm-hmm. There was also a grant available mm-hmm. through CURB as well.
Yeah.
It's not large, but at least the what we're looking at with phase one is improvement somewhere on the order of $400,000 to $500,000 is at least the preliminary engineering cost estimate for phase one.
So what, I think a lot of people in the audience too are thinking, okay, so that's plan A.
Mm-hmm.
The DOE said they were good with you on that. Is there this possibility they say, no, we want this completed as we proposed back in May, I guess, where we did the design and then we're looking at full implementation next year of the full design? Is there a chance they're going to say, no, we don't want to do the step-in period? And if there is, what's our plan B? Is there a plan B?
I think my experience tells me that when you demonstrate that you are actually laying out a good faith effort, and here's the reality of the cost estimates as well as just the timing of the elements to get things done, that they will find that acceptable. So I'm hoping that they do find it acceptable. Do they have authority to take actions if we are not in compliance? Yes, I think technically they do. I think from a both from a reasonableness standard as well as in any type of public or political arena, if we can demonstrate that we are absolutely moving ahead, we've not drug our feet on any notion. I think it is unlikely that they would seek the remedies such as fines and penalties against us. I just that seems extremely unlikely to me. I think that if we demonstrate that we have a plan, it actually meets your procedures, and given the time frame that we have to then get it approved by you, then move forward with it. Here's what it will take for us to implement. I think that once we demonstrate that they are looking for compliance. They are looking for us to demonstrate that we are aggressively moving towards compliance. And so that's not quite a plan B, but I also don't. I think that it's extremely unlikely that they would avail themselves of any type of penalties or other actions.
So, where in the schedule does the actual sealing off of the outfall and installing a lift station occur?
Phase one.
It is in phase
mm-hmm.
one. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which also, I think, demonstrates and that we are actually one of the primary critical steps is that we are going to an alternative besides a marine discharge. Right there, you buy an incredible amount of benefit to the environment, because we've now gone to a different discharge standard, and we're not discharging directly to that marine environment. So that we're committing to that early in the process, I think will will make sense to a college.
Quick comment, Jim?
Could somebody explain the lift station outfall? I presume you're going to plug the outfall and lift it up and filter it somehow.
Yeah, it's basically it's we'll put a plug and a valve on the culvert. There will actually be probably a box built, and then prevent intrusion of seawater into it. Then the pumps and things get built there, and then we'll pump it back upland.
Good, thank you. Like a weir box.
Yeah. Quick. Is there any precedent for them delaying deadline like this? And two, is there any danger with the Department of Ecology getting sued from outside groups for us not complying?
There is certainly within that this is authorized under the Clean Water Act, and there's ample case laws and precedent for reasonable timelines and working with people to come into compliance. To the best of my knowledge, we are the first boatyard that has been issued a administrative order under the boatyard permit program. However, the authority then it comes from both state and federal statute, and so these types of things are negotiated on a regular basis as to actually what implementation schedules look like. As to the risk of litigation, that exists all the time, and so is that potential out there? I think indeed it is. But again, I think that within analyzing the risk of that, looking at have we taken all prudent and necessarily good faith efforts, and I think that we can clearly demonstrate that we have.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What's next for staff report?
I've got a couple other things. So we have been meeting with some consultants to look at potential methodologies to look at Point Hudson and what uses might be available down there. We've met with two. We'll likely then be asking for a request for proposals and selecting some a consultant in the very early part of the year to assist us with that. We're definitely looking for a team that can work very closely with existing staff, so we're not in any way looking to hand this off to a consulting room to come up with ideas, but rather to expand our own internal capacity so that we can do the spatial analysis on what we have there, what our utilities are, what the current existing zoning and shoreline overlays, what kind of uses would be permitted, and then what's the marketplace for that. Then looking to say if we were able to change some things, what could that bear? So we just met with some folks to get their thoughts on how they might approach a process like this, and then I'll be asking for some proposals here in the near future and making a selection that will be working both with the staff, then with the commission, and then with our stakeholders and eventually the public. And we'll be talking about that process in detail at the retreat.
Okay.
I need to check to see. So she's not gotten the PowerPoint?
Yes, I haven't, yeah.
That is... I'm going to turn to Greg and have him go, and I'll come back to a couple points where I try to fool with this.
So in what we're trying to do in both in operations, we haven't really done a huge amount towards business development, but we're trying to focus on just fundamental business, practices. So we're trying to position ourselves for the future so that we're not just waiting for business to come in the door. We're actually going to go out after the business, but we got to be also be able to handle the business. So we look around the yard and we can see that there's capacity within the marina and within the yard and the RVs for additional business. But instead of just going out and trying to start generating a few, a handful or 15 additional vessels, we're going to try to position ourselves, because if we don't meet just another 50,000 or 75 or 100, we literally need to start building the base for literally millions of dollars of additional revenue.
So we're going to try to build that out. So first, we've been working on finding the capacity for the RVs, as well as all the marinas and the boatyards. And part of that goes into also really how they actually conduct the business to date and how it's defined, because we do have software. And if you look at the software, it doesn't really actually align with what our capacity is. So it's a real empirical, a little bit painstaking business, and it also is kind of a good dialogue for the staff, because they haven't really been expected or asked to, you know, bring a lot of ideas forward in terms of how we can really make the business a lot better and more efficient. Also, we're trying to get them to try to transition towards really being customer focused. And to that end, you know, we're drawing on, they already have an awful lot of knowledge about the business, but it's trying to capture that and incorporate, come through and develop kind of a systematic approach of what are the barriers to conducting business with a port, and what are some of the good and bad experiences, frankly, and address those issues. A lot of times people all know what the issues have been, they just haven't directly kind of been handled. And then also giving them the tools and the support to do that. So it's really starting from all the way from where the when we going out and getting the business, can we handle the business efficiently, and then what are all the barriers to going all the way through to actually making sure that they return, come back, and give us more business, as well as also understanding kind of the tenant and their needs concurrently, and actually, you know, we have to help those guys out and partner with our tenants in order to generate more business so that we're actually on the same page, you know. It's counterintuitive, but to date I would say that I wouldn't characterize it that we're aligned with our customers and our tenants exactly. And so that's something that we're working on. But we'll look at we're also going through with developing the capacity and carrying capacity analysis. And with that also goes hand in hand is the rate analysis. So we've got quite a bit of information for the RV business and quite a bit for boatyard and some information from the moorage. We're going to update it. It's probably going to take it a little bit further than what we traditionally do, because we're trying to actually understand what the market, which way the market's moving, as opposed to just reporting out current rates. So that takes a little bit more due diligence, and then actually putting it into a form that is a little bit more user-friendly, that you can actually look at it as opposed to trying to read the whole thing yourself and trying to understand it. But from that, we'll build out the arguments of how we're pricing, why we're pricing a certain way, and it'll be transparent. We're also, there's just kind of the way that it's been structured here for a long time. It's not completely siloed by any stretch, and people have been working together for a long time here. But there is, we're trying to integrate, rather than have these lines of business, moorage, or RVs, boatyard, we're trying to integrate all that together, that they work together, so that ideally the customer can call in, there's just one person that they they get in contact with, they run it in order to integrate everything. So let's just say if you want to bring a vessel in here and you want to go up on the dry dock, or go into the boatyard, I should say, you can get your moorage, everything in one fell swoop, and it's consistent. So we're actually going through really and talking to actual customers, seeing what their experiences are too. So we're conducting some audits from that direction as well. So it's kind of a comprehensive approach, but I think that it is, we're trying to look for cures, not just symptomatic relief. We're also really focusing on, we're trying to look at our current tenant base, and we're trying to make sure that we retain all current customers and tenants as best as we can. And we're also trying to extract from the database information that we have how we can actually make sure that we're retaining past customers so that we get them to come back. And then we'll look at what we have for capacity, and then we'll start going after that specific business in order to backfill, you know, excess capacity, if that makes sense.
Any good news stories of people looking at moving here or coming here?
Yeah, I mean, there's quite a few more vessels. I know the I don't know if I hate to talk about other people's business, but you know, I know there's more vessels coming in here. We did talk. We're trying to close on a couple of different leases, and I think that's going to come forward here. We're still working with the Coast Guard, a couple other tenants. We have a new tenant potentially that looks like they're coming in. They brought some business they bring quite a bit of business with them. They had a really substantial business in another port, and they were looking. They've never done business with Port Townsend before. They're very, very good reputation. So we just closed that. We submitted a quote to them yesterday, for example. And what we're hoping is that's going to turn into a really long-term piece of business that is business we've done, but I think they'd really complement some things that are missing, you know, in terms of some of the services that they provide. And they're super enthused to come here. They've done a ton of work. They go to a lot of the other shipyards and do work. But I think they would be really a great customer. So we sent them over the quote, went over it with them on the phone. Sounds pretty good. And they have a kind of a book of business that they'd be bringing in.
Yeah.
But I don't want to name them until we close
the business. Yeah, I hear you. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Eric?
Nothing this week.
Pretty quiet.
And we lost Abigail because she actually, answering to the question of do we have good news, and that is wanted to point out that our financials at the end of October are looking very positive and that we are trending in the right direction.
Excellent.
Yep, perfect. And just queued you up for to talk about the financials for the end of October.
Oh.
You didn't get to ask about your favorite boat.
I'm sure we'll hear about it later.
Well, the timing was supposed to be after this after his. So, because you've already gotten the report for October, but I just wanted to reiterate that, you know, based on where we were, at year-to-date October, we're just looking really well in operations. You know, against the budget. We measure against the budget. Revenues were up 3%, and expenses were down 3%. And so our net income is like at 33% over budget, which is amazing. And when you compare it to 15, it's not as spectacular, but because when we compare to 15, our net income is only up by 11,000. But we did make some changes we knew we were going to make with some expenditures. I think overall we're looking good, and based on these performance trends of the revenues and expenditures for 16 so far, I think we're going to come out better than the budget anticipated by year end. So,
excellent.
Yeah.
So when do you think we're going to be able to buy some new vehicles or newer where the doors aren't falling off?
We'll have to put it into our
beginning to look like road warriors out there.
Yeah, I think probably
that's going to be going into again that this focus on the fundamentals and really coming up with a fleet management plan as well as, you know, our other capital assets. So I'll go back to the retreat agenda.
Well, just real quick. So I met with the facilities maintenance manager with Larry Ozzie. Mm-hmm. We went through the whole fleet. We got the Abigail put together the capital asset plan. We put in a spreadsheet. We put it into a schedule. Mm-hmm. And we laid out every vehicle and when we're going to replace it, and then we put a budget together, and then I asked, can you please just make sure and go over and review it one more time and just take a look at it, and then we were going to try to match it up against the maintenance cost too, so because, you know, if it might be old, it might be not costing us very much money, so we just prioritize as to what we're going to ask, you know, for the capital for approval. Mm-hmm. So Larry's in the process of reviewing that. He's got it in his hands, and so that will be incorporated in as a part of the capital plan.
Cool.
Yeah.
So was that capital, our fleet budget, did that include any criteria for electric vehicles? I mean, or is it just a dollars amount and you do whatever you can?
What we did was we didn't spec out what we were going to replace it with. We're just trying to get here's what we have for our asset. Here's the condition of the asset. Here's what he just went through off the top of his head and kind of proposed what he would recommend. And I just used a thumbnail saying, okay, we don't want to, even though we have four vehicles maybe that need to be replaced, let's just be reasonable. Maybe we'll just replace a couple of them next year. But if we have to, And then how do we go about that? What would we propose? You know, whether it be a new used, so to speak. So we'll have to look at what that's comprised of and what the recommendation is and why. I've dealt with all sorts of different fleets, and I can tell you there's a real range. Some things sound really good, but then they just don't hold up under heavy use. So, you know, I said, Larry, just put some thought into it as to what the ask is going to be going forward. You know, what's practical? You know, if you get a bunch of equipment and an electrician gets in there and they got to have a bunch of cable, you can't just have a little light truck, for instance. So we'll come to you guys with I'll be submitted to Sam for a recommendation as what we are looking at going forward. But
yeah,
fully understand and agree with Brad and commissioners.
Right. So that brings us back to our retreat and how we're going to be spending our time there. This is a draft agenda. We're actually going to be meeting with our consultant after this meeting and refining things, but I wanted to put it in front of the commission and just get your initial reaction first. And before we get into how we're thinking about the days, just wanted to start putting out in front of you is the interpretation of from the budget and really what staff is going to be focusing on. And it is building our business. We are looking at a very ambitious goal of increasing our revenues by $500,000. So that's going to require some real focus of the organization. And so as we lay out our work plan for next year, we're looking at aligning our efforts both sequentially and what can happen in parallel, what needs to happen sequentially, and making sure that we actually have the capacity to bring on the changes that will help us with this business development. So to that, we're really looking at getting this focus on the fundamentals and building our business practices, and that is both with our operations and our capital. So we're doing things like mapping the yard. We're building our base layers with our utilities and where our traffic patterns are, everything from electricity, so we can get a good understanding of where things are on our properties. We'll be doing this organization-wide, and I'll go over kind of how the order that we're doing that in. But that way, so again, to emphasize what Greg was saying, is you'll see some excess capacity right now, and that because we are placing a focus on not hitting a pause button, but moving forward deliberately so that we can actually plan things out, so when we bring business on, we know we have the capacity to be able to provide them with what they need. For example, that they have the power requirements that they need, that they have the ballasting, et cetera. So we're going to be looking at doing the planning of the yard, but also that goes into Point Hudson and the airport and Cushing and everything. So we're kind of mapping the world at this point. We're also then looking at bringing on, as I think someone said earlier, bringing us into the 21st century, or maybe even the latter part of the 20th century, with some electronic processes, making sure that we can schedule online and we can schedule electronically, that we have a good way to track where our slips are and how we're booking those, and making that we can analyze our capacity and then set our rates accordingly. We've got some training to do. We've got some software to purchase. We're already rolling those out. We want to make sure that staff has the resources to do what we all are setting our goals for, and that's how we're going to be meeting with staff the first part of the retreat, and I'll go over that in a minute. Really putting a lot of time into continuing to develop the capital plan. As I've mentioned a couple times, the capital plan that we adopted in this year's budget is truncated, mostly because of our bonding capacity and our ability to actually be able to fund those. But we also need to really look comprehensively and in even more detail than the capital repair and replacement plan provides us. So we are working on everything from developing a methodology for project management and our project books, but also making sure that we're very clear between staff and the commission, so that when you authorize us to expend funds on a project that we know if what our limits are for if we're going to run over that, at what point do we need to come back and have approval to do that, that we're actually have a full accounting of our planning and engineering and permitting cost, and that that's well understood and well documented. So we're introducing that methodology into the organization as well. We'll literally have, you know, electronic books of here's where all the documents are for a project, and we can find them in one place. Doing things like lease auditing, making sure we can map the lease areas, and so that we're doing a subscription for a GIS system, so we'll be able to then click on, let's say, a leased area, and then it'll be able to tell us what the terms of the lease are, when what's the expiration, et cetera. Bringing some of that information out of the paper files and getting it onto GIS is going to take some effort. It's definitely an investment, but it's going to make things way easier for us to both manage now, but also then look at how we plan for the future. We're also developing a comprehensive approach to our grant programs, matching it up with our capital programs. We're meeting with USDA and CURB next week. Also, we'll be setting up a meeting with Army Corps of Engineers. We'll be continuing to reach out to other agencies for, as we look at our capital plans, where the other funding mechanisms out there. And make sure that, and that's where I think the advantage is having the six-year rolling capital program, is that then you can kind of see what's coming and then we match the funding strategy to that. We have a number of capital projects and looking at how we're going to complete those next year, not the least of which we actually have signed now the contract with American for the breakwater repair, and we're going to have our pre-construction meeting on January 9th. And so they're going to start moving in quickly after that. And so we need to set up the project management for that. And so I'm currently working on assigning staff to that issue. They will need to be finished by February 28th, so it'll be a pretty quick project. I don't have a construction schedule yet. They'll bring that to recon, but I imagine they're gonna move in pretty quick afterwards. We are looking at controlling expenses, and we've heard this previously, particularly with a focus on utilities, and so we've made progress with the city of where we can install additional water meters. We're then looking at how we are allocating cost out according to lease, and that's part of this lease auditing process that we're doing. So we will be sending out some communication to tenants here in the near term and saying, you know, we've been looking at our files, and it appears that you have not been billed correctly for utilities in the past, and we're rectifying that. So expect some changes in your billing at the beginning of the year. So we'll be sending that out very quickly. Go right, and it talks specifically about the retreat. So the first day, the morning we're going to spend with just staff and the facilitator, and really this is an effort to take all the things that the initiatives that we're looking at, everything from training of staff and customer service to teaching people some computer programs to, you know, what type of maintenance projects are going to go first. So we can both align them and have people have a clear understanding of what we're going to be working on, what the priorities are, and then in what sequence that they're going to go. So we'll be mapping out the year for us. We'll then have the commissioners join us at noon, and at that point while we're eating, we'll have a report out to the commissioner on here's the work plan that we've laid out that meets the objectives of the budget and what we've been previewing to you. So you'll get that rollout and that report out over lunch. At that point, then the senior management staff will go back to their duties, and the leadership teams represented here will stay, and we'll start in on looking at the capital improvement program and the industrial development district. We'll do a very quick review on that, just to say, here are the projects that we have, here's our bonding capacity. You've seen that before. We won't spend a whole lot of time, but just a refresher to get us all back in the same frame of mind. And then we'll talk about the industrial development district, and again, a very quick refresher of what the elements are on that, what a timeline would look like if you were to adopt that this coming year, or adopt 2017 as the base year. Then we'll kind of step back and say, what would this look like for the port in Jefferson County? Do a SWOT analysis on it, and what are the components of it, and then starting to say, if you're going to move forward with this, what would the timeline look like? And really mapping that out, and then what are the implications for both the commission and staff, and then who would be doing work, what, because there would be work for all of us to do on that. So we'll lay that out, again, kind of on the calendar, in what I call the big chunks, you know, not excruciating detail, but this is what it would look like. We would need to do this first and then this next, and you know, by June we should be here, by October we should be here, you know, and absolutely we need to adopt resolutions at these such and such dates. The next day we'd be looking at how we would proceed with optimizing a port asset in specific Point Hudson. And so we'll at that point be talking with you about some of the things we've discussed with some consultants about some potential paths forward of what those planning steps might be, how you might engage stakeholders and other community members, because I think that we've not had a robust discussion about this, but it's my opinion that planning for Point Hudson is going to necessitate and really get the best product. If we're talking with the tenants down there, and we're talking with other stakeholders in the area and members of the public, it's going to be a different planning process. So what might that look like? And then, again, a timeline. How would that lay out across the year? Also then, at the end of the day, talk about governance structure and kind of the difference between governance and management, and then in particular, you know, who's going to be doing what. What's the commission's role and kind of duties, and what we're going to put on your dance card for next year, and then what staff going to be working on. The second day, really kind of bringing these all together. So now we've laid out these three main things, kind of our you know, business and operations work plan, the industrial development district, and then the optimization of Point Hudson, and overlay those on top of each other and say, how does this look now that we look at these three main thrusts of organization, and do some reality checking and really make sure, you know, do we have the capacity to do this? Do we need to modify it? Do we need to modify our goals? You know, are we capable of pulling this off? And working on, you know, getting that agreement, and this is really become like, are we all on the same page? Does everyone understand what their roles will be? And then also thinking about how we're going to do our communications external to the organization to not just people that attend here, thank you for your time, but also you know, people that are our tenants, our customers, and then the larger community. So that, in a nutshell, is the retreat schedule as we have laid out. Before I ask you if you have any questions or comments on it, I do want to just go to the next page, which is looking at, because I know that you are getting questions from people, and I know that people here are curious about what's our general schedule for rolling out some rate adjustments. And so we're looking at that we'll have the recommended rates for mortgage and RVs in January with a schedule effective date of February 1. So we'll look at what kind of notification that we need to send out, that we're expecting to bring the have those completed and ready for recommendation in January. Yard and properties, you know, these are going to be really what we're looking for is integration of our rates and having them work well together across our line of businesses, mortgage, yard, and our properties. Again, we are taking some time to do this mapping and planning. The mapping's already underway. We'll probably really start putting some pen to paper on what's the plan, where can we put different uses on the yard in February, and then rolling out the rates sometime in late February, March sometime. We're likely not going to bring rates forward in all one fell swoop, and that's one of the things we'd like to discuss at the retreat. Is I know that's been past practice with the organization is that you adopt rates once a year, and staff feels that we need to think about a different model for that, and that we need to have some flexibility and ability to change rates throughout the year.
So are you suggesting mortgage and RV rates separate from yard rates, or are you suggesting various yard rates can be changed, you know, one time the haul out, one time something else?
Likely the latter. So we will bring the mortgage and RV rates forward first,
mm-hmm.
And then after that we'll likely bring some portions of yard rates. Whether we can do the full package, we're just not quite certain yet. We do want to talk about the ability to have flexibility to change things, and as I'm going to steal Greg's phrase here, move at the speed of business. So.
So we're trying to, you know, really get a really robust analysis approach that is transparent to everybody. When you talk about race, there's a lot of perceptions and there's a lot of stuff that's just talked about, you know, kind of management speak. You know, we're going to try to roll out a really empirically based approach that also all the staff is engaged in too, so they actually are going to help, you know, have ownership of it. We'll all have ownership in the sense of how we're going to position the port. But it may be that in order to do that, we are, you know, we're just trying to go about it programmatically. We could just go with a kind of a broad brush approach and send you percentages, which is what's often happens at a lot of ports. We're going to try to go about it a little bit more systematically. So, for instance, we're not proposing anything for the airport yet because I don't have time to even to get to that point. So we're just going to say, okay, we're going to go about some of it is by a little bit by line of business or by facility, and some of it may be if we propose something and let's say we go down a path and we find that we're not being competitive, then we need to change it. Mm. And we're not going to wait a year to change it.
Mm.
So we've implemented some things, and some things work and some things you know when they don't work. And so you might as well respond right away and just say, okay, we're going to make an adjustment. There are some things that have been in place for a long time, and we know that they're not working super well, and we're going to respond to that too. But we want to be thoughtful about it, right? So that if we come to you with a recommendation, everybody can feel that it's a pretty well thought out approach that you can also understand and duplicate, you know, and you understand the logic.
Another example I'd give is we've heard discussion from the commission and as well as speaking with the tenants that of the 3% charge for heavy haul out, we're looking at a model so we can phase that out and look how that we we provide a valuable package to our tenants, and they are giving us suggestions. We've been meeting with some of our major tenants, and they have ideas about what would work for them, but we will be recommending a phase out of that 3%, and we're looking at how we incorporate that in the overall rate structure. Again, so that we're really looking to make sure that we understand our lease portfolio and that our tenants understand their leases, and that we can provide them with we're going to be moving away from the basic that you will just have a lease for the footprint of your building. A lot of our tenants want something different than that, and so we want to be able to accommodate them and be able to have more clear boundaries of, you know, what spaces are being used by whom, and then what are the revenues being generated by that space. We've met with some of the major tenants, and they're not only open but eager to have this discussion, and it will vary by business, because not all business needs are the same. So we're looking at changing how we work with the tenants, and making sure that we can bring them in the utilities and things that they need. Again, throughout the whole year, we'll be introducing various business practices into the organization, and they could be everything from, you know, online reservations to automatic payments for our mortgage tenants, et cetera. So we're, you know, laying that out as, you know, what's a good game plan, given the staff that we have and the amount of changes that we're making. When do we think that we can accomplish those? And all that will require training, and we've reached out to Peninsula College and some other people about how we might provide training to staff, and then just some generalized, you know, customer service training and other things. I think that's always important to give refreshers for folks and keep them up with, you know, what are the latest thoughts and trends in customer service as well. So, hopefully that can provide you with some answers if, you know, as people reach out to you and say, when are rates going to change, et cetera. You can always send them our way as well. So that then, do you have any other comments or questions about the retreat schedule, or things you want us to make sure that we're covering that you don't necessarily hear here?
Just real quick for the audience, the retreat is January 4th.
And fifth,
and it is at
Fort Ludlow. And, yeah.
And it starts at 9 p.m. Mm-hmm. or 9 a.m.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And the public is encouraged to come. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Sam just went through a whole lot of stuff, so I'd just like to move back and rerun the tape for just a few minutes. A lot of the work that you're doing about capital facilities. Mm-hmm. Is something that you may want to incorporate into a capital facilities master plan. Not wanting to add to Eric's workload already, but the point is that with the Republican Congress, their benchmark for awarding grants is going to be very high relative to the work that you've done. And a master facility plan, capital facilities master plan, is like an incredible ticket to grant funds.
Mm-hmm.
It says that you've done the work.
Mm-hmm.
And just to tie in with, again, I'm thinking in the grant world here right now, the fish derby might be a place that you get match from. We don't see a benefit, maybe, or maybe we worry about the money that the ramp would generate. But you can claim that as match because you're donating a facility to the community. And so getting very good at that bank account, that match bank account, means that when you come to the table, you've answered questions for grants that other people are swimming, trying to find answers for. So just those couple of points.
Really good point.
It's just kind of preparing, and you're already doing most of the legwork for a capital facilities master.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Give you an idea, Salish College spent spent $50,000, got a grant, $50,000, wrote a master plan, and garnered $7.9 million off of that, just because they'd shown the grantors they'd already done their homework. So just, not that we'll get $7 million, but you know, it's just an idea.
We're shooting for it, Gordon.
What was the word you used, Gordon? Ramp?
Ramp up?
No, for the ramp and...
Oh, it's called match.
Match.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Match. And I'm sure Abigail is already keeping a match bank account.
Yeah.
Because you can't use match twice.
It's called right. In kind.
You know, you can only use it once, and you have to show the feds that we're only using it once. But boy, you don't want to let that go. Match is critical for the
feds. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, so we're done with staff comments. Any other staff comments? We're moving on. Public comments. So we're back to public comments. Jim.
When you go talk about Point Hudson planning, I encourage you to talk to the city about traffic control for the huge RVs you're driving down. A few weeks ago, I was crossing from the travel lift to the washdown. I almost got run down by a woman who hadn't been going 50. So there's no sidewalk painted, there's no speed signs. Speed bumps.
Yep.
The curbs are extremely narrow.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want you to encourage more speed, but somehow make it safer. Work with the city on it. I mean, you guys aren't responsible for roads, I know.
I agree, though. We, you know, for us with 220 with Jackson, we have people come around there. In fact, there's one character that comes around there in a truck, a pickup truck, and he's got to hit 30
it's
by the
like
time he's going by Carroll.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's dangerous.
Yeah,
so.
It is.
We'll do something about it.
Yeah. Especially the roads within Point Hudson are vacated.
Yeah.
Are they?
Yeah.
So what does that mean?
Yeah,
the port.
Yeah.
And we did receive a complaint about the speed, or I did just recently. So then what we did was we looked out. I talked to maintenance and talked to Larry and said, let's why don't we get some signage? And then also we could talk about, I mean, there's a number of things you can do for that.
Crosswalk. That really gets people's attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Guess mine when I see them.
So what we talked about was we just looked at doing a layout for Point Hudson and in fact, I just printed out a drawing and said, let's just lay out, go out there, do a walkthrough. And then, obviously, with the tenants and people live out there that see it every day.
Yeah.
But, of course, the people that work out there, they know, TJ and other people. They had specific recommendations that they said.
Good.
So then it's just a matter of executing it.
Good.
So when we see Port Townsend police car going through Point Hudson, they actually, if they were passed by someone else, they actually wouldn't write a ticket? Because the roads are vacated, or would they?
Within the city limits, I didn't think they'd have authority.
Seth?
You
know, it's a good question. The reality is if they see something that's unsafe, you know, they can intercede anywhere in the city,
right.
Just like, you know, I mean, or anywhere in the city, they can intercede, and if they see somebody doing something unsafe, they can just not look the other way. I doubt, but, you know, that's a matter of... you can just put up signage or whatever, but ultimately you have to put in traffic controls.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of different ways you can prevent this from happening.
Yeah. And a lot of that, the most effective ones are what are called calming and it's visual cues. So people will slow down when there's vegetation nearby, and so there's a whole science to that of how you get people to slow down.
Yeah.
Eric.
I was just going to say, as a practical matter, Port Townsend Police is short-staffed and overstretched as it is, and they typically don't seek to do traffic enforcement on what they, from an enforcement perspective, consider to be private property.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally they're lost, though, at Point Hudson, driving around down
there. Do you see them?
Or hiding, one or the other, I'm not sure. Any other public comments? Yes, in the back.
I wanted to tell you that we're almost done forming a committee, a citizens committee of 14, to investigate the possibility of a public-private partnership with the port and coast and the community to approach the problems that we have down there, improvement, and get all players involved. And we haven't quite got the right committee, but we're almost there. We're going to meet. Start meeting at the end of January.
That's excellent. That's great news. We look forward to working with it.
Yeah.
Thank you. George?
Yeah, I concur with that. That's a very delightful development, and we'll see. And I caution you with Point Hudson. Point Hudson is a sacred cow, let's say, for the whole community. And just a heads up, when you're discussing alternatives and things like that, don't get ahead of the public on this. Give them an opportunity to say, or you could go to them and say, don't tell us what we can't do, tell us what we can do. And have that conversation before you really get down to some bidding kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think from us, what's kind of what you're hearing too is, we hear the marine heritage mantra, and you know, when you look at Carol and Steve and Brian and everything else that goes on down there, that's what we're trying to do is just make sure that we're codifying that in a way that's productive for us, that we can pay for things, but that we can carry that forward as well. So,
yeah,
we're with you.
And George, first of all, how are the microphones, George?
That's the other thing I was thank you. A little high tech, but by God, if he's willing to put this together like this, I appreciate it.
Great. So yeah, we're definitely striving to be very thoughtful about how we engage tenants, stakeholders, and general public with Point Hudson. And last thing that I personally want to do, mostly because I just think it would be extremely ineffective, is to have us, you know, do a plan internally and be really insular about that, and then just go out and say, hey, what do you think of our plan? Because I just don't think that would work. and so appreciate your comment, and we're trying to be very mindful of that.
Mm. Any other comments? Okay, moving on to commissioner comments. Steve?
Yeah, I went to several things last couple weeks. One thing I went to just a couple days ago was the airport potluck. I couldn't believe how many people were there. You weren't. But it was just, Tailspin Tommy's was jam-packed. There had to be 125, 150 people there, and it was wonderful. Everyone was in a good mood, convivial, just having a great time. And it was really neat to see the airplane community together as a community. I mean, I'm not a pilot, and so I don't get out there a lot, but you could just sense the camaraderie that was out there, and it was really gratifying to be a part of it. The MRC committee, we had a meeting where there's a group of us that are going to start working on derelict boats. I'm not sure if you're aware of the limit of the boats that always get blown. Well, I'm sure you are. The boats that always get blown onto the rocks this time of the year, every year. It happens every year like clockwork. And what happens when they get blown on the rocks is it becomes a difficult thing to clean them up, the broken pieces. Whereas if you can keep them from getting blown on the rocks, that's a lot easier. Well, we had a perfect example of that here just a couple of weeks ago. There was a boat that had blown into the area where the railroad Y used to be, and Terry Kyle got on it and knew who the owner was, forced him to get it back off and out on its hook again before it became a wreck. And at the time, I thought, well, that's really good of Terry. But since that time, I'm thinking that was wonderful of Terry, because now I'm trying to figure out what to do with the boat that didn't get removed, because it wasn't smashing itself on port land, it was smashing itself on DNR land. And DNR dropped the ball on getting it removed when it was still intact, and so now it's not intact, and it's a mess that's going to be a real pain in the neck to clean up. We got a bunch of batteries that are out there laying in the sand flats, you know, so not just one or two, but a whole bunch of big golf cart batteries, because it was electrically powered, and aluminum and stuff all over the place. And so it's going to be a real problem. And so getting these, being proactive on this is something that the MRC is wanting to get done, and we'll be doing it in concert with the port and with the DNR and with so on like that. We're starting in Troy. I was out with me last night, and we went out because it was a low tide, and we found the remnants of two boats that had smashed up out there that we're going to be talking to Dan. So anyway, we're trying to make a protocol that the port can be a So that every, so that people will figure out how to get this done ahead of time.
Steve, what is the MRC?
I'm sorry, MRC means Marine Resource Committee.
Okay.
It's a committee that's actually a committee that advises the county commissioners. It was put up to make recommendations on shorelines. It's full with a bunch of biology types, and they try to do near shore restoration to protect the coastlines. And it's a subset of the Northwest Straits, and they do a lot, and there, you know, there's representatives from all the commissioner districts and from various things like commercial growers and so on, like recreationals, and they do a lot of really good work. And so this is a real thing to keep the derelict boats from, because where those boats are is out there in a potential sandlands habitat.
I was going to ask you, is that State Aquatic Lands? Is there any way to get those boats out of there? They're out there because they don't have insurance and they can't come into the marina.
Exactly.
And this has been going on for years.
For years.
Forever.
You can predict it.
Exactly. Every year. Whose
timeline is that? That's what I spent about 3 hours on the phone this morning figuring that out. And there's a convoluted map. The port owns up to about that little point that sticks out where the railroad Y used to come off.
Yeah.
We own those tidelines. That's how come Terry realized that, and he was very proactive in getting that sailboat off before it broke up into little pieces.
Yeah.
From the little point down about another 200 or 300 yards is DNR land. And then from there on back, it goes to the mill. And the problems that we have is that if we can keep the boats from going onto the rocks in the first place, you eliminate all these problems. Once they go on the rocks, then it's the landowner's responsibility to deal with them.
Yeah.
So that's, again, why I say kudos to Terry. Unfortunately, DNR didn't really have a representative out here to keep that guy from going up on the rocks. So what we're trying to do in our little group is to try to be proactive and keep these boats from becoming a problem in the first place, because we know when the winds come, we know when they've been out there too long, and it's, you know, we can actually do it ahead of time. We're just having to get it all formulated and get all the people that are involved to agree to a plan, which is what we're starting now.
Good.
Yeah, Bob?
There's so much water to say that it's more of a statewide issue, I would think. Is there any interest in legislation?
Yeah, there's part of this is actually a state derelict vessel fund that always runs out of money, because it always is a real easy plum for legislatures to pick and say, oh, here's some money. And I mentioned that at the last, you know, you hear us going to these WPPA conventions all the time, and the last one that I was at, I went to the environmental group. And they were looking for things to have the legislative priorities lobbied for when in the sessions, and we moved that up, since it always runs out of money every year, up to a higher spot. So now WPPA is going to be lobbying to increase the funds for derelict vessels, because ideally there was the place where you could, when you had a boat that you knew wasn't going to be able to be dealt with, you could turn it in to DNR and they'd take care of it for you and you wouldn't have to dispose of it. That hasn't been funded for a while, and something like that funded again would make a big difference. Because as it is now, it's going to be a real expense to get that old aluminum one out of the mud. And it's going to have to get out of the mud, because it's got batteries full of lead and sulfuric acid and a fuel tank and stuff out there.
And to clarify, that's the DNR's responsibility?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But here's a difficult thing, because DNR didn't really have any people, and so DNR usually subcontracts it out. They subcontracted that particular one out to the county, and the county didn't have any money either, so they were going to use inmates, and because they have a workforce, but getting them out there is kind of problematical, and they kept having problems with staffing to get them out there, and so it just went on so long that there's nothing left. I mean, and now all the tides are at night, so it's just it's not a very good system. We're trying to make a good system out of it, and it's going to take, and anybody that has any ideas, we're all ears, because we meet the first Tuesday of every month, and we're going to be working on this.
Send me an email. I'll come to one of your meetings. I might be able to help.
Great. Yeah, I'd love to have you.
Yeah.
And then, let's see, after that, the NODC, I went to the NODC meeting, and the NODC, I hate acronyms, so I apologize for using them again, North Olympic Development
Council.
And what that is the economic development people from both Jefferson and Clallam get together, and there'll be economic development guys and people like from the city and from the county and from ports and so forth. They talk about what they're all doing, and that's the organization that you've heard Kate Dean say she's been leading for the last several years at the Council of Governments. Well, I attend that meeting. I'm one of the governments in the council, and she's done an excellent job, and she's no longer going to be doing that because she got a new job. And so they're part of the NRDC was looking for her replacement, but we also had a kind of a year end where we talked about the stuff and the people have been doing, and the Port of Port Angeles has been pretty amazing. They've been doing lots of stuff. They've got some that composite thing they put in out there at the airport. They had just come back from a meeting with the Commerce Department in Seattle, and the people from all over the world were playing with their composite paddles that they're going to be marketing. So that's going great. And then Connie Bouvier, who's a commissioner, had developed a water filtration device that will be able to utilize any little surface water sources for when the earthquake happens. You can clean them up and drink them, and the port's moving forward with that. And so it's kind of a place where people, where the agencies that are tasked with the economic development can get together with other agencies and find out what commonalities they have that they can work on together, and what other people are doing to get inspired to do your own. And so basically this last one was Kate's last meeting, and we have our SEDS, which is what does SEDS stand for?
State Economic Development Strategy.
Community?
Community.
Community economic. Yeah. Yeah, basically it's the thing that Gordon was just talking about. It's the plan that you put together so that you've done your homework, that you can say this is our plan that we're going to utilize to get grant funding for the economic thing. So we got that thing done. So that was the last NRDC meeting. We got our SEDS done, and life is good.
Okay, Brad?
So is the COB or the NOAA ship going to be part of what we're discussing in the exec session?
Yes.
Okay, then I won't ask about it. Mm-hmm. I would like to ask about this incident with the creepy RV selling drugs on port property. And it's really troubling that the police weren't able to take more of an aggressive stance with making them, either arresting them or somehow forcing the issue, as opposed to just putting a sticker on their window and then leaving. Especially when, after that happened, I followed the RV, and it went and parked down in, by our heavy haul-out pad and seemed to resume business. And so
I don't think I heard anything about that. So what?
Yeah, it was a big RV. These guys were clearly selling drugs out of it.
Yeah, if I could just very briefly speak to it, and this, you know, this is the stuff of law journal articles. I will only say that the RV was initially parked in city right of way off port property, and there was no proof of illegal activity. What there was suspicion of illegal activity. The police sought to have the vehicle move along. I think a citation was issued for illegal parking, and that is what prompted the vehicle to move. It moved to a location which is routinely and ordinarily open to the general public on port property. The port does serve ejection orders from port property for violations of port rules. And that ejection order, then, once it's served, we solicit the support of law enforcement to enforce those orders. In this instance, there was no clearly identifiable violation of port rule. And I should also back up and say that those ejection orders do include language within them clearly outlining the due process protections that are afforded the individual that has been ejected, because they're entitled to basically procedural and substantive due process and a hearing before an appeal body. In this instance, it's the Port Commission, as you remember from a prior recent incident. So we're looking, we're working currently with the Port Townsend Police Department to look at our rules, see if we can shore those up, and make sure that we've availed ourselves of every opportunity to reasonably and prudently eject individuals from port premises that we believe are here without business with the port and for activities that are potentially in violation of law. But we want to be very careful about this again because we're mindful of the constitutional protections afforded everyone.
Good.
Yeah, I guess. That's unfortunate. I mean, because it's not just that one incident, but there's, it seems to be getting worse every year with homeless. I don't know, really homeless issues, but people living in really creative vehicles that are parking out here at night, and. Mm-hmm. Somewhat
nefarious
activity.
And that is an area where I think we can ramp up our enforcement efforts and eject people. Because that, to my interpretation of port rules, is a violation of port rules.
And our night security guard does that if they're parked on port property very regularly and is finding people who are illegally camped. When people are camped in out here on Jefferson Street, that is 24-hour parking that's available. I am going to approach the city manager and ask if there's a provision that we might change that to you know, a 12-hour or an 8-hour parking area to discourage that practice, because you're right, there's a number of people that are out there for, they move from spot to spot, and you know, they're there for a number of days. We'll also be looking into ways that we can clearly define that if you are violation of port rules includes being in the way of our operations at all. And so some of the spots down by the haul out, we've all seen it when people have camped there, and you know, and it's even just, you know, people who are going to go kayaking or bicycling, and they park in our way, and we need to be able to make sure that we can conduct our business operations and keep people safe. So we're looking at both the rules, but then also the physical layout, and particularly for pedestrians and bicycles, giving them a safe pathway through our property, and then expecting them to be there and not other places.
You know, it seems like there's been a ramping up too of just the drug activity because of all the needles that some of your employees have been finding lying about, and I just, you know, it's pretty frightening watching what's going on in Seattle, but I consider they've allowed to happen with a homeless problem, drug problem completely out of control, and we're a pretty small community here, but it sure would be, hate to see that. We're seeing an increase in that here as well, and we think we need to get ahead of it somehow.
Yeah, and it's a real risk to our employees. Larry has gone over our procedures of how we reach into trash cans and stuff, refresh the training for employees so that they're minimizing their risk of getting a puncture from a sharp, et cetera. So we're looking at our processes, then what we can do to properly control the use of our property, and at the same time making sure that we're within the bounds of the legal framework. So
Brad, how did you hear about that? Was it in the paper that I missed or something?
No,
this just happened Monday after you and I met Steve. Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, I'll just real quick. I've had meetings with Tom Albro, Port of Seattle, and I met Monday night with Port of Edmonds. And everybody's really excited about what you guys are doing. And so I'm just publicly saying you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
And keep up the good work. Yeah. So, and with that, so we're going to move on to executive session. And just talk a little bit about the schedule so everybody's aware of it. We are not meeting the last Wednesday of December, which is December 28th. And not a lot on the books. And we've got this retreat coming up. And we just felt with the last week of the year, we're going to have a lot of people gone. So We will not be meeting for the second Wednesday of December. We will have this retreat, which again is at on the 4th and the 5th at Fort Ludlow, starting at 9 a.m. And then our first meeting will be on the 11th. We'll have a workshop at 9:30, and then we'll meet at 1 o'clock. And with that, we are going to adjourn into executive session. Thank you for coming.
The session is expected to last.
Oh, yeah, and this session is expected to last 25 minutes, and we've got two topics to talk about.